Hey, if I haven't told you already, Sergeant War Dog TV has an app. It's now out on both the Apple App Store as well as the Google Play Store. Download it today. Find directions to Camp Doghouse. Hear all of our podcasts. The entire Sergeant's playlist. View pictures and get directions straight to Camp Doghouse, all from the app. Download today, Sergeant War Dog, baby, on the War Dog Trail. Salute. Be sure to follow Sergeant War Dog TV on social media. You can find Sergeant War Dog TV on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, Vimeo, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Catch us online. Subscribe, like, and follow us. Salute.
Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Let's go to war, baby!
All I know is war, all I know is you, all I want is more. I'm a soldier, I'm a warrior, got a emblem on my cover, and ask me what I did for ya, I put the trash deep down under, yeah. I'm a dog of war, hell's what I've been through, I'm a dog of war, I did it all for you, yeah.
Welcome to episode 22 of the War Dog Trail. In this episode, I will make one reference to a major event during my second tour in Iraq, and I'll tell you about my third tour. I want to tell you briefly about April 13th, 2004. After 2 days after we'd assaulted Fallujah, we found ourselves in a firefight in the city of Al Karma, Iraq, which is only about 30 miles or so from Fallujah. Now, we got into a 14-hour firefight there. We got into a 14-hour firefight with insurgents in Al Karma that were the fighters from Fallujah who would go to Al Karma to restock and to regather fighters. They were using it as a resupply point, and then they'd head back into the city. So that's why we hit Al Karma right where they were during their resupply times. Now, during that firefight, we ended up taking fire from their mosque. So we called a Spectre gunship and we blew up the entire mosque with the shooters inside that had been trying to kill us all day. Now, once that happened, the city emerged and erupted like a hornet's nest with shooters coming from all directions. I mean, 360, right? At one point in time, I found myself on a rooftop by myself and with the M249 squad automatic weapon. I had at least 130 or so rounds on me inside that drum, the 200-round drum. So I had 130 rounds left in that drum, and I had another 100 or so rounds wrapped around me like a Rambo roll wrapped around my chest. I'm on this rooftop, and we're taking fire from all directions. We're taking indirect fire as well. I'm seeing mortars drop. They're walking on to us. I'm seeing them drop on the road behind me, then there are Humvees that are behind me. And I know while I'm on the roof, this rooftop by myself, that I really had to make a pimp decision. I had to make a man decision, right? I had to make a G decision straight up. Do I stay on that rooftop so that I could keep eyes on any of the guys that were going to be rushing at us from that roof? Or Do I get down off the roof? Because if any indirect fire that happened to be walking in the area happened to be, you know, directly hitting those Humvees and hitting that road, anything that would have fell on that rooftop would have obviously killed me first and killed me instantly. So I had to make a real pimp decision. Do I sit there with my saw and engage it in these guys that might come through this avenue of approach that I was watching, which happened to be a palm grove? Or do I get down and make the smart decision and get off the rooftop and try to regroup and find another place? And since I'm still sitting here talking to you, and I was blessed and lucky enough to keep this story going, obviously I got down off that damn roof, right? Now, I got down momentarily and was able to regroup with some Marines, and we had a talk and discussion about what was going on and where we could regroup and what happened to be happening. But a decision was made for me to go back up on that rooftop, but this time with another individual, with another Marine who also happened to have a saw. So we had two saw gunners on the top of this rooftop watching a palm grove. And at some point, there was movement that I'll never forget. I was able to see like a bluish or teal shirt that a guy happened to be wearing. And I could never remember if they were actually six or eight. My mind confuses me at times now to remember if there were six or eight of those guys that were running through the rooftop or running through that palm grove at me. But I used my M249 and I engaged all of them. And I was able to take all of them out before they could get to me or the Marines that I was fighting with there in the city of Al Carmel on April 13, 2004. Now, we finished that second tour and we returned home to the States by around August. That's I told you back in episode 21. However, I also told you later on in January of 2005, we received orders to return back to Iraq for a third time. How our number kept coming up or why I was lucky enough to keep getting my number chosen, I will never know. As large as the U.S. military is, I never understood for the life of me how I ended up as one person, one guy. You know, if I had only had to go once, do one tour, I think I'd have been fine. Having gone twice was even more, but that third time, after everything we saw and did before, I was burnt out. And I really didn't give a damn about a lot of things. And, you know, I kept always thinking, you know, the saying, third time's a charm, man. So here I am going to the third tour in Iraq, about to have my third birthday there. Every day was just kind of like a death wait, wait for a death sentence. I was waiting and wondering, was it going to be a car bomb or a sniper or a landmine or what the fuck was going to take me out during that third tour? I was lucky enough to even make it to my 21st birthday while I was there. And, you know, finally of legal drinking age, found a way to celebrate while I was there in Fallujah for that third tour. Now, if I didn't mention, that third tour, we were exclusively in the city of Fallujah. Now, having coming back, after being there, you know, just months, just the year before, after the Blackwater contractors were killed, we were called right back into Fallujah for the third tour because most of the units that had fought so hard during the November major battle of Fallujah were now combat ineffective and needed more personnel. They needed reinforcements. They needed to be rotated out and have fresh Marines brought in. So with our unit being so experienced and having done so well during the first two tours and pulling down Saddam's statue, earning the presidential unit citation, fighting well in Fallujah earlier in the year, some fucking way we were called back to Fallujah again for a third tour. For a third 7 to 8 month ride. And something about going back there, going back to the exact place we had been, only this time we were in different, completely different quadrants or sectors of the city. The part of the city that we assaulted back in April
was actually near the MSR, near the hardball, near the highway. So from where that was to where we were now, near the actual bridge where the Blackwater contractors had been hung and murdered, we were on totally different sectors of the city. But this time we actually had to live amongst and right next door to the Iraqis, which made that entire tour that much different. We lived in a large complex which used to belong to an ice maker. You ever want to know who the ballers are, who some of the ballers are in a Middle Eastern or desert city, go check out the guys who sell ice. They make some of the most money in the entire area, and they live nice. And in this particular time, this guy's compound might have had four or five different little houses inside of it. So our entire company of 200 to 300 Marines paid him monthly and took over his house and had our different platoons, you know, living and stationed throughout different parts of it. And we lived right there in the city of Fallujah, right on the street, you know, so it's right as though, just as though we had a street address, you know, here in the States. We lived right amongst the people. And now, we weren't the only ones. So we had our 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines. We had our line infantry companies living in and amongst the city at different areas throughout Fallujah, while the main contingent of our battalion was stationed at Camp Abu Ghraib, which is a small camp adjacent to or just outside of Camp Fallujah. We would also call that Camp AG. Camp Abu Ghraib was also Camp AG. And that's where our 3-4 headquarters was based. But the line companies, the grunts, we actually lived in the city, as I said. So you had three companies, India, Lima, and Kilo Company. And I was with Kilo Company, living within the city of Fallujah, living amongst the Iraqi people in, you know, buildings or factories that we could take over and that were large enough to hold all of our men and Humvees and equipment and everything that we needed to operate and live in amongst the city. Now, a major reason that we needed to be back so fast in January of 2005 in Fallujah was because the parliamentary elections were coming up at the end of the January. They were scheduled to happen regardless. So, irregardless of, you know, what the combat and effectiveness looked like of the combat units that had gone through the hard push of the Battle of Fallujah, they still needed to have that proper security posture in place for the parliamentary elections. So I am proud to say that I was a part of the first Democratic election for the Iraqi parliament back in 2005, where I truly got to understand and appreciate democracy and the power of each individual vote as I waited for 16 hours on a rooftop with my saw, with my M249, and I watched Iraqis walk up and get searched by my fellow Marines and had their fingers dipped as they voted for their candidate choices for parliament for the first time since Saddam had been out of power. So I did get to experience that, you know, extreme of actual democratic process and democracy being carried out before my eyes while I waited for any suicide bombers to or snipers to potentially disrupt the elections there in Fallujah. Luckily, we had no incidents. The elections took off and were held without incidents. We did have a very high turnout there in Fallujah, not as high as, you know, any of the percentages we would have had here in the States, but high enough that there were, like I said, people voting and even women that were having their right acknowledged to participate and to vote and to be searched and to come down and have their fingers dipped so that they also could acknowledge that they had voted. And the finger dipping was so that they couldn't double vote or cheat, or they would have their finger dipped in a certain like paint or dye so that they couldn't get back in line and cheat or try to double vote or disrupt the democratic, you know, the natural voting process that we're used to or that we might take for granted here in the States. We had to make sure that was done on a grassroots level. And that kind of stuff isn't taught to, you know, your modern militaries or your Marines that you're actually going to be a part of nation building like that. So it's because of events like this that I later went on to become international relations major at UCF down in Orlando. It's because I really became amazed at democracy, international trade, working with different militaries, the Brits, the Azerbaijanis, everything that involved, you know, something saying made in China or made in another country. Just amazed me and blew me away, especially when it came down to the largest of all international, I guess, showdowns, you'd say, that I had experienced since age 18, that being war. I wanted to become big into understanding the U.S. State Department and diplomats and ambassadors, you know, consulates, what foreign policy was, what the foreign policy of other countries were, what their stances were. And I really wanted to just be a part of protecting them. But anyway, going back to the third tour in Iraq, most of that entire deployment outside of the elections was fairly quiet, peaceful, and uneventful. I did not have to fire one shot in anger or in defense at, during that deployment that I can recall. Now, it doesn't mean there weren't any deaths or any close calls during that deployment, because we still did have some. We did lose a Marine sniper. And there were times that Iraqi soldiers or policemen that were around us in Fallujah were killed. And even worse than that, there were 5 female Marines that were killed in a car bomb. And because we bring the females out to search the Iraqi females for us, because they had a big problem with us touching their Iraqi males had a problem with us as men touching their Iraqi females. So in order to respect their culture and not disrespect the males and start riots over stuff like that, we would bring out our females from, you know, their secretary or clerical type of jobs or whatever other jobs that they happen to be in, communications or whatnot, and we'd pull them off of their jobs from the Camp Fallujah and bring them on 7 tons into the city of Fallujah and bring them out to the entry control points, the ECP, so that they could search females for us and make sure that they weren't bringing in, you know, weapons or bombs. And on one particular day in 2005, while those females were headed back to, they finished their day of work searching, and they were headed back to Camp Fallujah, when a vehicle that was strapped down with explosives, a car bomb, also known as a VBIED, or vehicle-borne improvised explosive device, happened to ride up behind them and detonate, killing at least 5 of them. And I had to see the large black mark that left in the road. I had to see it, and all the other Marines that knew them had to see it each day, you know, for the rest of that deployment in Fallujah, knowing what happened to them and knowing sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifices that they made as females in the Marine Corps. At this time, I'm going to take a break and bring you the Sergeant's Playlist.
PVS, you forgot to hit it. You a bald little nigga, get stepped on. Fuck a ex, little bitch, get flexed on. I don't like that shit, play the next song. She say I'm too hard to get slept on. Go and make a play, bring a check home. She said hurry up, daddy, don't take long. You can go out with her from rubbing the neck home. Come on, baby, let me fuck you to my best song. Marvo been lit, he too lit. That bitch been thick, she too thick. That bitch too skinny, she a toothpick. She talk too much, got loose lips. Niggas in my phone like what the move is. Got bitches in my phone like what the move is. Might go and run it up at Roof Chris. See me with the next bitch, she like, who this? I'ma go in and I just started. Got no key, it's a push to start it. Ballin' with a beard, he James Harden. Unstoppable, they can't guard him. Ballin' at the park, that's LP. Long live lil' cuz, LLD. Smoke green, get green, that's healthy. Loud pack in the air, that's smelly. Young nigga world, shout out Melly. She got a little gut, little belly. Got a room for the night, hit the telly. Just tell me when you're ready, hit the celly. On the block all night like a 9 to 5. I told Charlie she could talk from 5 to 9. Drink wine, eat pussy, that's wine to dine. After we hunch, eat the dick like lunchtime. Got these hoes waiting like the lunch line. Good dick make her glow like sunshine. She say she just wanna have a fun time. She say I'm always like that, I say sometimes. Damn boy, you hard, you ain't no. Can't go outside, I can't go. Breaking out the chains, the Django. My niggas had 30s on the Rangos. My niggas move weight like a factory. Big bag of runts, that's rapper weed. Seen a fed car, know they after me. Run routes, run plays like an athlete. You a bull, little nigga, get stepped on. Fuck a ex, little bitch, get flexed on. I don't like that shit, play the next song. She say I'm too hard to get slept on. You a bull, little nigga, get stepped on. Fuck a ex, little bitch, get flexed on. I don't like that shit, play the next song. She say I'm too hard to get slept on.
All right, that was Marvo Ben Lit with his song Stepped On from the Sergeant's Playlist. You can find Marvo Ben Lit on Instagram at Marvo Ben Lit. That is at MARVOBENLIT. You can also find Marvo on Twitter at Marvo2Lit. That is at MARVOTOOLIT. Now, headed back into that third tour in Iraq, as I said, most of it was uneventful. Most notably, though, besides the vehicle-borne IED that killed those 5 female Marines, I did get injured during that third tour in a very big way. I'll never forget, sometime in June of 2005, we were doing a night patrol through Fallujah. And this was while there was a curfew in effect of 11 p.m. The U.S. military did have martial law in effect, so we were allowed to impose a curfew on the city. And we were out at about, you know, zero dark 30, midnight or so, 12:30, 1 a.m. in the morning, on foot, patrolling throughout the city, looking for anyone that was out, that was possibly into something they shouldn't have been. Now, we did end up finding an individual that night, and we zip-tied him and took him back with us. I happened to be the very last man in the patrol that night, commonly known as Tail End Charlie. My job was to watch the back of the patrol, the rear, as we proceeded and patrolled tactically throughout the city streets in Fallujah at night, scanning the streets with our night vision goggles and our PEC-4s and PEC-2s. Now, there had been a hole that was blown in an Iraqi street by an artillery round, or maybe by a car bomb, but this hole was about 7 feet deep, and it was still full of jagged rocks and asphalt and water from the street itself, from the road itself. As our patrol passed this 7-foot hole, no one in the patrol happened to pass the word back to me that there was a hole there that night. So, unfortunately, while I was turned around and watching the rear for most of my steps as we proceeded throughout the city, As we got to one intersection, like I said, no one in any way through microphones, throw mics, head mics, passed any kind of word back like, hey, man, hold to the right, hold left. Hey, watch out for that hole on the left, Smitty. None of this shit was passed back. So I go from scanning the rear of the patrol and, you know, basically walking backwards to make sure no one was following us, and then I had our backs, I was watching our six, to me turning around, taking a step, and falling face forward 7 feet deep and tearing my ACL. And on top of that, swallowing some of the dirty ass water that was inside of that hole, so that I also had to take some meds later on to ensure that I hadn't ingested anything that could kill me in their water. I have to admit, I was pissed after I fell in that hole, and I broke all noise discipline. I was so pissed, I cursed every motherfucker on my team out. I was hurt. I had to be assisted to be pulled out because I was carrying an M203 grenade launcher at that time. By then, I was an E4, a corporal. I picked up rank. I'd become a non-commissioned officer and promoted while in Iraq. So I was now leading my own patrols in Fallujah, leading my own team, and occasionally leading. And yeah, I've had times where I did lead the patrols of the entire squad throughout Fallujah. On that particular night, I wasn't in the lead, though. As I said, I was the tailman Charlie watching our six. And I tore my MCL, falling in a 7-foot hole while scanning the streets with my night vision goggles, my MVGs, and my PEC-2, PEC-4 aligned in my muzzle of my M203 grenade launcher. Also, at that time, they had what was called a PEC-2 Alpha, or PEQ-18 Alpha, I want to say, maybe. That was connected to your 203, so that you also had the same way you had a laser coming from your PEC-2 that was aligned to your muzzle that you could only be seen through your night vision. You now had that type of guidance for your 203 grenade launcher that could only be seen while wearing your night vision goggles. So I did get hurt for that part of the deployment. I had to spend the rest of it finding other menial duties and ways to assist and help out the team. You know, whether that was radio watch or watching gear or other things to ride out the time for the last month or two, since I was hurt with the torn MCL and couldn't really help and do anything as much as I wanted to. However, regardless, once we got close to our deployment ending around August and we knew that the last patrol was coming up, regardless of how much my knee hurt, I did gather myself together to say that, yeah, since I walked in that country, I was going to walk out on that last patrol, and I jumped my happy ass in and hobbled and gimped and went both out on foot patrol out of our forward operating base within the city of Fallujah and back and on foot, just so I could say that I was a part of that last patrol on foot. And the weirdest thing for me, I have to admit, is that I have finally bought into the fact that I actually might survive after having three tours, and after, you know, the entire time always thinking, hey, that third time's a charm. So I knew I was going to die at any time during that third tour. And I was just always wondering which way I was going to get it. It hit me during that last week or two of the deployment that my happy dumbass might just be lucky and blessed enough to survive and stay alive. So I had a reversal of mind, or of my mindset, in terms of me having my rule where I never allowed myself to get caught up in wanting to live or wanting to go home or to be begging too much to, survive stuff. Because you can only keep yourself stressed out and worried about whether or not you're going to be hit or die for so much before you burn yourself out. You just kind of have to put it in God's hands and say, fuck it, and roll with it. Roll the dice, let the chips fall for it where they may, and prepare to kill any of the enemy motherfuckers that you have to in the infantry and the grunts as you're assigned to and as your fellow grunts are assigned to. Because that's what the mission is for 0311s. The mission of the Marine Rifle Squad, let me say real quick, for an 0311 is to locate, close with, and destroy the enemy by fire and maneuver, and to repel the enemy's assault by fire and close combat. Alright, excuse me. Be a bunch of Marines that want to kick my ass and curse me out for getting that wrong with. Excuse me, grunts. It's a late night, and I'm just trying to get this off my chest tonight about this third tour. So I was hurt. We ended the tour, returned home. Again, around August of 2005, I returned home for 30 days back to Orlando. This time, I had left my car in Orlando, so this time I flew home to Orlando from my base in Cali, and then drove my car back again from Florida to Cali. That time by myself, Florida to Cali by myself. Stayed in hotels in New Mexico again, or Memphis, I think. And I just had a blast, you know, decompressing and riding across the country, coast to coast on my own from Florida to Cali again. Now, upon arriving back in, on base, I was given a different role. I was going from active Marine rifleman to instructor. And myself and some of my fellow Marines, we were all assigned to become instructor controllers at a program called the Mojave Viper Program out in 29 Palms, California, where pretty much each unit that had to head out to Iraq or Afghanistan was responsible for coming out to this training package in the middle of the desert, where they went through 30 days of CACs, or combined armed exercises, where they would learn to immerse themselves in the full combination of Marine air ground combat, where that's with, you know, guys on the ground, planes, helicopters, tanks, artillery, your grunts on the ground, everyone. You get to see the full assault and mix of all of us on that big, huge 900 square hundred mile base of desert space out in the Mojave Desert of Southern California, located in 29 Palms, California. Now, while they were there also, they would have to go through the Mojave Viper program in addition to CACs, which is an additional 2-week or 10-day program where they'd have to go through operations such as Urban Assault, which was similar to paintball, only we'd be using 9mm paintball rounds, 9mm rounds full of paint that actually hurt, you know, just sort of to teach our Marines a lesson. We'd also be teaching them entry control, ECP ops, vehicle checkpoint operations, VCP ops. And we would culminate that with an actual exercise in which we had actual Iraqis and Arab-speaking Americans that were hired by acting companies to come in and act and pretend to be Iraqis. We had an entire mini-city built out there to resemble a Middle Eastern city, where we had actors, as I said. We had some Marines acting as actors. We had some actual actors, as I said, that actually spoke Arabic or did have Middle Eastern descent. And they would all come out and try to make things as realistic as possible for the Marine units that were about to head downrange to either Iraq or Afghanistan. Now, I held that role as an instructor from, I want to say, September, October of 2005 until March of 2006, in which I was allowed to in my first, my initial enlistment for a school cut for an early entrance, an early exit from my contract so that I could make the summer semester for UCF down in Orlando, Florida. And that's what I did. I moved back home to Orlando, went to school, got my unarmed and armed security licenses for security guard work. I also had already had my concealed weapons permit for years. So I found work, different armed and unarmed spots, full-time overnight while attending college full-time during the day. Eventually, I was able to land a spot with the Lockheed Martin missile and fire control facility in Orlando, working there overnight during the graveyard shift and still going to UCF during the daytime so I could keep my security clearance active by working at Lockheed. Because I really had an initial plan of wanting to graduate from UCF and still have my security clearance active so that I could jump right into the State Department's Bureau of Diplomatic Security. And I really wanted to be a part of their mobile security detachment, their MSD, their team that can respond to any embassy, any consulate, any threat on an ambassador or diplomat within, I believe, 6 to 12 hours around the world. That's the team I really wanted to be on and really wanted to make it to after graduating from. So that's why I really harped on wanting to work so hard and so long for the period that I did, the year or so that I did. Just as everyone says, so you can gain experience. So I had my wartime experience, I had my college experience, and then I was gaining that corporate and security level experience while being a licensed armed and unarmed security guard and or security officer in Orlando, Florida. At this time, we'll take another break and bring you right back into the Sergeant's Playlist. Salute.
Good vibes. Yeah, I pray for them good vibes. Yeah, good vibes. Hey, I pray for them good vibes. Abundance and favor, abundance and favor. I pray for them good vibes. Abundance and favor, abundance and favor. I pray for them good vibes. Stay healthy and able. Crush you with your paper and I spread the good vibes. With abundance and favor, every day. I pray for the good vibes. With abundance and favor, abundance and favor. I pray for the good vibes. With abundance and favor, abundance and favor. I pray for the good vibes. Stay healthy and able. Crush you with your paper and I spread the good vibes. With abundance and favor, every day. Hey, yo, what's on my mind? You know them Q's and P's, yeah. Dotting up all my eyes, crossing up all my T's, yeah. Every day that I arise, I thank God that I am breathing. Had pneumonia 3 times. Prednisone used to have me geeking. A body full of scars, yet them odds are gladly beaten. The struggle hit me hard, still my faith was undefeated. My L's could've made a square. Catching hell was all too frequent. Every month, almost weekly. What a soul that called for reaping. Only took a few times to peep it. Everything gotta fall on me, and couldn't blame nobody else. In that mirror, I'm all I see. Plus, I hear of ancient myths. Certain entities and beings, they harvest pain and fear. They depend on you to feed them. The light that's in your spirit will eradicate the demon by altering your thinking. Might just be your strongest defense. This energy and matter, you control how you perceive it. Better believe it, my boy. Whatever you want to be, hey, be it. I pray for them good vibes with abundance and favor. Abundance and favor. I pray for the good vibes with abundance and favor. Abundance and favor. I pray for the good vibes. Stay healthy and able. Watch you be your paper. Now spread the good vibes with abundance and favor. Every day, and I pray for the good vibes with abundance and favor. Abundance and favor. And I pray for the good vibes with abundance and favor. Abundance and favor. And I pray for the good vibes. Stay healthy and able. Quadruple your paper. Now spread the good vibes with abundance and favor. Every day, yo. Good vibe. Every day, yo. Good vibes. Every day, yo.
All right. That was Jonas Wheeler with his song GVAF, Good Vibes, Abundance, and Favor. Again, that was Jonas F. Wheeler with his song GVAF, Good Vibes, Abundance, and Favor. Now, Jonas can be found on Instagram at Zerk Nation. Again, that is on Instagram at Zerk, Z-E-R-K, Nation. Briefly, while, as I said, going to college, UCF, working full-time overnight, Lockheed Martin, working, going to school full-time during the day, UCF, I was lucky enough to be using the GI Bill. Also had an academic scholarship in the state of Florida, the Florida Bright Future Scholarship. And then on top of that, I had a scholarship and was named a military scholar by the Horatio Alger Association for Distinguished Americans back in 2007. So I did have some pretty decent things going for myself at the time after having been a 3-time war veteran by 2008. By 2008, I was recalled by the Marines. I came home one day from class and had a FedEx letter at my door saying that I needed to report. I needed to call a certain Marine number and report to a base in Kansas City within, 48 or 72 hours, something like that. So I call the number, get a plane ticket. I fly out to this base, get evaluated to find out whether or not I'm going to be recalled and have to go back to Afghanistan. And for whatever reason, I wasn't pulled in then, but I didn't know at the time I was having hearing issues and hearing problems. So I don't think I was making it for the hearing standards anymore after all the explosions I'd experienced during the first 3 tours in Iraq. So I continued back home, and maybe it was something about after being recalled, man, that just brought a bunch of things back out of my civilian, out of the earlier Marine Corps life, into my now civilian life as a student and security guard. I had been out for 2.5 years, been out of active duty and going to class, and I was just about to enter my senior year when, for some reason, everything that I had forgotten about during the war came back. Everything from 3 tours of not remembering, of suppressing, of just carrying on with life as normal and being happy to be alive and back in the States seemed to come to a pause and seemed to flood me and rush me. And that's when I knew I was struggling with PTSD. That's when I didn't know the name of it, but I knew something didn't feel right. I knew I was having the sleeping problems. I was having the anger issues. I was wondering why it was I wasn't happy without me being as angry as I was during the war. Why I wasn't able to focus or seem to be able to concentrate or, just perform the way I wanted to. At this time, I'm going to end episode 22 on that note. And let you know that from this point forward, we will go into how PTSD began to ravage my life and be my demise, so that I ended up being hospitalized in psychiatric facilities on 5 separate occasions. So please keep in mind, everything that you see done now with Sergeant War Dog, Sergeant War Dog TV, or the War Dog Trail, hey, all of this is being done after I hit absolute rock bottom with PTSD, with depression, not with drugs or substance abuse, because those weren't my demons, just with my own mind and suicidal ideations and battles with suicide prevention. So problems with thoughts of worthlessness, hopelessness, survivor's guilt, this is the episode that's gonna let you know, or that's gonna that's basically gonna anchor that point of allowing you to know when my suffering from PTSD after my combat experiences did enter the realm and enter them this story and enter my hike down my own War Dog trail. This has been Sergeant War Dog, episode 22. Salute.
All I know is war. All I know is shoot. All I want is more. But I got some things to do. I'm a dog of war. Hell's what I've been through. I'm a dog of war. I did it all for you.
DDB Radio.